ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्री चैतन्य चरितामृत मध्यलीला Chapter 7, text 128, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada.
Jare dekho tare kaha Krishna upadesh. Amar agyai guru hoya tara edesh. Jare dekho tare kaha Krishna upadesh. Amar agyai guru hoya tara edesh.
Translation. Instruct everyone to follow the orders of Lord Sri Krishna as they are given in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. In this way, become a spiritual master and try to liberate everyone in this land. Purport. This is the sublime mission of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Many people come and inquire whether they have to give up family life to join this society, but that is not our mission. One can remain comfortably in his residence. We simply request everyone to chant the Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. If one is a little literate and can read Bhagavad Gita as it is and Srimad Bhagavatam, that is so much the better. These works are now available and in an English translation and Tamil translation also, and many other languages, and are done very authoritatively to appeal to all classes of men. Instead of living engrossed in material activities, people throughout the world should take advantage of this movement and chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra at home with their families. One should also refrain from sinful activities, illicit sex, meat eating, gambling, and intoxication. Out of these four items, illicit sex is very sinful. Every person must get married. Every woman especially must get married. If the women outnumber the men, some men can accept more than one wife. In that way, there will be no prostitution in society. If men can marry more than one wife, illicit sex life will be stopped. One can also produce many nice preparations to offer to Krishna, grain, fruit, flowers, and milk. Why should one indulge in unnecessary meat eating and maintain horrible slaughterhouses? What is the use of smoking and drinking tea and coffee? People are already intoxicated by material enjoyment, and if they indulge in further intoxication, what chance is there for self-realization? Similarly, one should not partake in gambling and unnecessarily agitate the mind. The real purpose of human life is to attain the spiritual platform and return to Godhead. That is the summum bonum of spiritual realization. The Krishna consciousness movement is trying to elevate human society to the perfection of life by pursuing the method described by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his advice to the Brahmana Kurama. That is, one should stay at home, chant the Hare Krishna mantra, and preach the instructions of Krishna as they are given in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. This is one of the most quoted verses of Srila Prabhupada. From Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's one half verse which he quoted more than this. I haven't made a statistical survey, but seems like that. Jive Surupoi Krishna Nita Das. And then this verse, Srila Prabhupada would often quote from yesterday's class, the class I gave yesterday morning here, at this time, you might surmise that, well, preaching's not very important and we should just sit and chant and become purified. But that wasn't the import. That wasn't the intended message. The message is that we should preach as Krishna wants us to preach. Preaching should be for the sake of imparting Krishna consciousness, not to boost our own egos. And by the subtle influence of Maya, we may not notice the difference. So, preaching is necessary. Srila Prabhupada opens the purport by saying, this is the sublime mission of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the instruction, whomever you meet, instruct them in Krishna Upadesha. Srila Prabhupada, as he often does in his writing, gives within the translation purport also. So it's literalists might protest that doesn't say anywhere in the Bengali about Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, but Srila Prabhupada expands or elucidates the term Krishna Upadesh to mean Bhagavad Gita, that which is spoken by Krishna, Krishnasya Upadesh, and that which is spoken by Bhagavan Vedvyas, who is an avatar of Krishna, who in Srimad Bhagavatam compiled Krishna Vishayak Upadesh, instruction in relationship to Krishna. So these are the two kinds of Krishna Upadesh. Of course, Krishna, we find that he gave, if we look through Shastra, we'll find instructions of Krishna given in other parts of Shastra also, and in his various avatars. In Varaha Purana, for instance, we have Varaha Dev speaking. But the essence of all Krishna's instructions are given in Bhagavad Gita. So this is the mission of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, to propagate these teachings. Now, Srila Prabhupada, in his purport, he gives a synopsis of the whole Krishna consciousness movement, what it's meant to be and what it's meant to do. From this, we can understand that simply to speak to others about Krishna consciousness, that's not the be-all and end-all. There's a lot more to do. There's a whole movement to establish, a mission to establish. Beginning with the individual, Srila Prabhupada points out that this instruction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who had, at this time when he spoke to Kurma Brahmana, had just recently left household life to take sannyas. And he instructed this to the Kurma Brahmana, who said, I want to take sannyas also. He indicated that. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him, you stay at home and chant Hare Krishna. So, different strokes for different folks. For most people, we don't ask them to leave home, but we ask them to chant Hare Krishna. And to, as far as possible, Srila Prabhupada says, to read his books. This instruction that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave is an instruction that we all receive in parampara, those who are members of the Gauriya parampara coming from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's an instruction received in parampara. In other words, even though this instruction was given to one who is called Kurama Brahmana in Gauriya literature and discussion, this person is always referred to as the Kurama Brahmana. He was from the area of Kurumakshetra, the place which is presently in northeast Andhra Pradesh, where there is a famous temple of Kurama the Kachap or tortoise avatar, and there aren't any other well-known temples anywhere in India. Can you think of any other? I don't know any other. There might be some side temples in some major temple. I don't even remember that. But so he's referred to, because his specific name is not given here, so he's referred to as the Kurama Brahmana. So that instruction was given to him to preach Krishna consciousness to whoever you meet. Now, in the modern age, that might be difficult. If you're living in a village, then it's quite possible. If you're living in a city of, Salem's about 6 lakhs, is it? Something like that, Salem City. If you're moving in the city, it becomes difficult because there are so many people around you. So there are modern means by TV, internet, and all this kind of thing. So that's also possible. To instruct people in these ways. By book distribution, Srila Prabhupada gave the example that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's public preaching method was to go with his followers with mridanga and kartals and chant the holy names, and he'd speak something also. At least we learn from Bhaktivinoda Thakur that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would go out, he would speak something to the people also. But Srila Prabhupada gave the example that the sound of the mridanga can be heard for some distance, but the sound of the brihan mridanga, the great drum, the printing press, that can be heard all over the world. So this book distribution is meant for bringing the instructions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to every town and village. And practically we see that, especially devotees distributing in cosmopolitan cities like London and New York. They'll meet people from all over the world, and those books will go all over the world. I remember when I used to distribute books in central London, then we'd hardly even meet any English people, and most of the books went to people from other parts of the world. And in fact, in central London, people, if you meet people and talk to them and say, well, it's nice to meet an English person, because that's got nothing to do with Krishna consciousness, just a side point. So our mission is to give this instruction, and we find that our movement is quite active all over the world and to some extent well known. In India, to some extent, our movement is well known, and especially among the educated class of people, and especially for our temples, because people, when they go, well, either they live in a big city like Bombay, where we have a big temple, which is a or they visit tourist groups, go to Bangalore and Bombay and visit the big temples, and they're impressed by the temple. And in other countries, our movement used to be well known for our book distribution and for our Harinam, chanting the holy names of Krishna in public. But after all these years, coming on 50 years, there's hardly any members of the public know what our message is, or that we even have a message. In India, those that know us, they have a vague idea that it's Krishna Bhakti. Not a clear idea, a vague idea. And nowadays, more and more people in India think that our movement is meant for feeding school children. That is the increasing perception of our movement. I don't find in all the instructions that Prabhupada gave here, or anywhere else in all of Srila Prabhupada's vast instructions, that he said our movement is meant for feeding school children so that they can have a better future and build the nation, which is, however, being propagated by prominent leaders of our movement. So, that in India, there's a general idea that we build temples and we worship in the temples and we collect money. People know that also. And nowadays that we feed children. And in the Western countries, if people have heard of Hare Krishna at all, what was your experience distributing books in Seattle? You did a lot of book distribution in Seattle. People know our movement? You used to be there, yeah. The older people. I had that experience last year in changing planes in some airport, Houston, I think. It was one old couple. He said, I was in the lift with them. I said, oh, what's this? I said, Hare Krishna. Oh, yeah, Hare Krishna. Something from the past. Like the old Hell's Angels or something from the 60s and 70s. You still see them driving with their motorbikes, old guys, you know, look, they're almost dead. And they look like, you know, like something out of a horror movie, like old skeletons driving a motorbike or something. So they're still going on. So, of course, devotees don't. Devotees look blissful, but people, if they know us at all, what do they think of us? Something Indian? Maybe they think that. I don't know what they know us more for singing. Maybe. I don't know what they think about us, but for sure they don't know that we have a message. Singing, maybe vegetarian food in some parts of the world, we've done in a lot of prasadam distribution. So they think, but they don't know that we have a message. And actually this message is vital. We have all the solutions to all the problems of the world. If people would take this seriously. It's difficult to get people to take this seriously because there are so many people propagating so many things. And the message of Krishna consciousness to most people, especially when they first hear it, it sounds somewhat strange. We can just imagine, and especially in the West. I just got a letter, email from America, from someone who I gave a lecture program last summer or fall, and in his house. So he must have been just coming to or becoming interested in Krishna consciousness at the time. And he wrote to me that, at the time I didn't know what to make of your speech. In other words, it's just like something completely unusual. The things we're talking about it's not the kind of thing that people talk about when they come together. They may talk about sports or... In the West, they don't talk about politics much, most people. In India, more. But that's changing also. In the last generation, they used to talk about politics a lot. Nowadays, I think not. Sports, what else they talk about? In England, they talk about the weather. In Bengal, they talk about their stomachs and their stool, how they're passing stool. And this kind of, but they don't talk about, well, human life is very valuable, and after many births, we got this life, and we're all suffering due to cultivating material desires. It's not something that anyone ever talks about. And even the swamis, they come around and they talk about peace and love and... I don't know what they talk about, but they don't talk the message of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. They don't speak such a message which is actually vital for everyone. So, some of the members of the GBC who I sometimes correspond with never tire of pointing out, as I point out various, what they wouldn't like to call deviations within our movement, they never tire of pointing out that our movement is also doing very many good things, which we agree with. So Ratha Yatra is going on and deity worship is going on. Just about. Book distribution is going on. So there are undoubtedly some good things going on in our movement. But unfortunately, at the present time, still, the people in general, and what to speak of the leaders, they don't know that we even have any particular message. It's just like, if you ask, if you meet some follower of some bogus guru, and if you ask them, oh, what's their message, and the follower often becomes confused. You've had that experience? Like, message? Who said that, you know, whoever said there was any message? What's the teaching? They don't have any teaching. And they become confused like that. What's the message? So what... people don't know that we have a message. They think we're just like some other group. You know, they have all these different groups, and some of them go around and they teach meditation, and others, they... Again, I don't really know what they do. I don't know if they know what they're doing either. But they think, well, it's just some other, you know, there are so many groups. Hare Krishnas, they sing in the streets. This is in the Western world. And in India, people think, well, we build temples, and nice temples. You go to the temple, nice temples, have nice festivals. Jamashtami, Ratha Yatra, so people appreciate that. And maybe, yeah, a lot of people also in this country know that we produce Bhagavad Gita, like that. But that, this movement has this solution to all of the problems in the world. That's a bold claim, but it's one that Srila Prabhupada repeatedly made. And it's, if we accept the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, it's very easy to understand, because all the problems are caused by forgetfulness of Krishna. That is the actual problem. And so economic problem is solved. How can you solve economic problem by remembering Krishna? Well, ananyas chintayanto mam ye janah paryupasate tesham nityabhiyuktanam yoga kshemam vahamyaham. You don't solve it. Krishna solves it. Just take shelter of Krishna. And of course, Krishna advises us that anad bhavanti bhutani parjanyadana sambhava. That we should also do some work. Sharira yatra pichate na prasiddhyata karmana. We have to do some work for maintenance of the body. And krishi goraksha vanijam vaisha karmas vabhavajam. The vaishas, they produce grains, they protect the cows. So Krishna provides, but he makes some arrangement within human society. So economic problem, the rupees plummeting down to the 60 rupee per dollar mark. What should we do? Gold. That's the answer. Don't trade in paper. Paper money. If Indians become westernized enough, they can use their 100 rupee notes for wiping their backsides after they pass stool, because it's about the size, same size and shape as a toilet paper. But it has no intrinsic value. It's a piece of paper. By law, it's been made a symbol of barter, but it has no actual value. So, gold, so actual things of actual value. So, how will you pay for your petrol then? You'll bring 3 kilos of rice or something for one. No, you just don't use petrol. The Prabhupada, he was, at the time there was a petrol crisis when Srila Prabhupada, it's manufactured by the oil producing countries, mostly the Arabs, who all of a sudden they woke up and thought, hey, we're selling this petrol so cheap, we could be getting more. And then they jerked the price up and they said there's a shortage of petrol. There's no shortage. Shortage of oil. And so the petrol, what to do? Prabhupada, his reply, don't use petrol. Well, how will you go from place to place? Don't go from place to place. There's no need to. Sit at home, produce your own food, chant Hare Krishna. So to most people this sounds like, oh, it's primitive. But anyway, when the oil runs out, then they're going to have to do that. Now they're producing from shale, which is it. If oil was an ecological disaster, shale is just millions of times more. Now they want to produce electricity by windmills, but that, it all, even to make the windmill, it involves so much ugra karma. And then this whole electricity-based society is just producing more and more ugra karma. And then people say, well, you also travel from here to place to place. Yes, we do. But just to tell you, you don't need to live like this. So there is a, I mean, that's, you could say the practical mission, or the everything about Krishna consciousness is practical, but that's the that's for people who are not even interested in Krishna consciousness, who are so dull-headed that they're just living like animals. So Srila Prabhupada has something for them too. That this Krishna consciousness movement is meant to show how people can and should live in a more sane way. The modern society is insane, completely insane, because it's based on the principle of apaswartha parayana, being absolutely attached to that which is absolutely against your own self-interest. What could be more stupid than that? That's insanity. So this is required to show people how they can live simply and happily without all these gadgets that people think you have to live with to be happy. And apart from that, well, it's not really apart from that, it's all interconnected. There is, of course, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, as given in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, and as given by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada specifically states here, promoting Bhagavad Gita as it is, because there are so many editions of Bhagavad Gita, which the name on the book is Bhagavad Gita, the shlokas are there, Bhagavad Gita, but the teachings are not Bhagavad Gita. The rascals, they manage to take the teachings of Bhagavad Gita and turn it upside down, inside out, and give something altogether different. So the teachings of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, that is the essence, of course. I mean, whether we live in the city or whether we live in the country, it's city taco, dehat taco, Sada Hari Bole Dako, whether we live in the city or the country, the essence is to chant Hare Krishna. And go back to Godhead. Chant Hare Krishna and go back to Godhead. And understand this philosophy. Even chanting Hare Krishna isn't enough. You may think, well, that's a radical statement. Of course chanting Hare Krishna is enough, but it has to be chanted with a certain attitude. Otherwise, bahu jamma kare jadi shravan kirtan tabuta napai Krishna pade prema dhan. We can go on chanting Hare Krishna for many lifetimes, but if we don't hear and chant in a manner that is conducive to Krishna consciousness, if it's not pleasing to Krishna, then the result will not be that we're liberated from material existence and we attain love of Krishna in the spiritual world, that we get birth after birth after birth. So, preaching among our own devotees is essential also. And getting this message out to the world is essential. And
for the last few years, actually, an excellent platform for preaching Krishna consciousness has been established in the Western world. Not so much in India, but it's coming up more and more in India also. Just like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he commented, you'll find in Brahma Samhita, he talks about Lord Shiva as Shankara, Shankaracharya. He maintains and nourishes the religion of pure devotion by preaching the impersonal philosophy. What? But he doesn't explain it there, but it's to be understood that Shankara, he didn't invent this philosophy of Kevaladvaitavad, but he formulated a philosophy which is in the consciousness, subliminally maybe, of every conditioned soul. It's the subtle philosophical manifestation of Ishvaroham, the idea that I am God, which Lord Krishna points out in Bhagavad Gita is a demoniac mentality. So by preaching that, and he made a big issue of it, he propagated it widely. And by doing that, he gave a platform for the Vaishnavas to stand up and say, hey, this is bogus! You're quoting the Vedas that Jiva and Ishvara are the same. This is completely bogus. So he created an interest in Vedic philosophy, which wasn't there. I mean, there were, we can understand from the histories of Shankaracharya, which, it's described that the Buddhists were prominent, and among the Vedic followers, the Mimamsakas, the totally materialistic people who Yamimang Pushpitang Vajang Pravadanti Avipasti, the Veda Vadarata, they simply the idea you perform karma and you enjoy this world. So although they have an elaborate philosophical system, but it was atheistic. And Buddhism also atheistic. So Shankara, he brought to the attention, there's Ishvara. There is beyond this world, there is the reality, Brahman. So he brought that out by misrepresenting it and gave the Vaishnavas the platform to attack him tooth and nail as he deserved and rip his philosophy to pieces. Ramanuja ripped it to pieces, and then later Madhvacharya came and said, hey, you didn't rip him up enough, and ripped him up some more. And he ripped Ramanuja for not ripping him up enough. So we have in the modern age someone who's extremely insignificant in comparison to Shankara or Ramanuja or Madhva, but he's providing a platform discussion for professing theism. Well, I mean, there's not one of them, but Richard Dawkins has become famous for promoting what he calls agnosticism, but it's practically atheism. And it's not only him, there are others also, but he's very fluent and lucid. He's a good speaker. Good speaker or bad speaker. He's good at speaking the wrong thing. So he's a bad speaker, but he does it well. So he's actually done a great service by bringing the subject of God to the public attention. And not only him, of course, there are others. Sam Harris is over there, his compatriot over in
New York, and others. But he's also done a good job of showing so many deficiencies in, especially in Christianity. And when he attacks religion, it's mostly an attack on Christianity. He doesn't have much knowledge of anything else. So he's brought it to the public attention. Otherwise, people weren't really thinking about it very much, and the Christians have rallied to protect themselves. But they don't really have much to stand on, because they have a very flimsy theology. I mean, he's trying to attack them philosophically. He's not a very good philosopher, actually. But he sounds good to people who are even more ignorant than he is. But you don't have to be a very good philosopher to point out the defects in Christianity. I mean, when I was about 12 years old, I wasn't a philosopher, but I had very good realization that this, what they're teaching us, is bogus. So, it's actually a very good opportunity for devotees to come and say, hey, there is God, like that was reported in the East Village, other, some local newspaper for the Lower East Side, when Srila Prabhupada came to the Lower East Side of New York City in 1965 or 6, he came. And a report was given that Swamiji has come to tell us that there is God. God is not dead, but he's not in the church. Whereas we find here, the Christians are very busy coming around and telling that he's not in your temple. That's all devil worship. So they're very busy to promote their brand of tamasic theism, which actually, we may not say this in public, although these days with the internet, everything's in public, but actually Christianity, it's atheism posing as theism, because they say that Jesus is God. So to call a jiva God is a form of theism. Atheism, and to say that he is God and he was killed and was dead for 3 days, that's also a form of atheism. How can you kill God? So there are many, many problems in this, and the violence, the killing. But actually in Krishna consciousness, we can answer these people very well. And you don't even have to be a super scientist or super philosopher. If you study Srila Prabhupada's books, then it becomes quite, of course, it may not be exactly just like eating a chapati, that you don't have to think about it, or idli down here. I mean, you may have to think about it and pray to Krishna and do some research and this and that, but actually his arguments are very flimsy, because they're not on the platform of the absolute truth. Some of them are extremely flimsy. I read his most famous book, that The God Delusion. And he was mentioning, because their whole thing is that there's no God, that everything is matter, it's materialism. I mean, philosophy, in philosophical terms, his idea would be called materialism. That means that they think there's nothing more than matter. There's no dimension other than that of matter. So they not only believe in God, but they won't believe in anything, the existence of any soul, and that means they can't believe in ghosts also. Not that belief in ghosts is a major part of our philosophical teaching, but it's something that a materialist cannot believe in if he's going to be a materialist. I'm talking about the philosophical term here, materialist, not the usual way we use the term to mean someone who's interested in material enjoyment. So he mentioned in about one paragraph in that book that when he was a child, at night he saw some flickering light and he was afraid it was a ghost. But then he got up and he saw it was just the reflection of the moonlight on the curtains. And that is his evidence against the existence of ghosts. Ignominiously weak, which is his own comment about a book called The Dawkins Delusion. Ignominiously means shamefully, shamefully weak. So actually we have very solid grounds, and that's why I asked Keshavanand Prabhu to come here so we could have some more discussion. We had some preliminary discussion. We should be out there and punching these. I mean, Prabhupada said not punch. We should be in parampara, kick them in the face with boots. These people are rascals. They're misleading people. But they are pointing out that Christianity has misled people for 2,000 years. And we should point out, okay, but you don't mislead. He says, I saw one video clip, he said, I'm interested in the truth. And what is the truth? The truth is what you say, we have to believe you. So we actually have very strong grounds. Srila Prabhupada, generally, when he was tussling with various challenges, actually Srila Prabhupada would usually give the challenge himself. He actually didn't diversify to many, many arguments. He'd usually just stick on one point. So, I was just thinking, one point in which we can catch these atheists. Just one point. There may be many points. One point is that, well, you say you believe in empiric evidence and all this kind of thing, scientific method. But it is a fact that one researcher spent his whole life using the scientific method with all requisite skepticism, investigating the supposed or the apparent phenomenon of reincarnation. And he came up with tremendous evidence. I mean, he actually, if a person is actually neutral and open-minded, which is not part of the scientific orthodoxy, to be neutral and open-minded, but we'll find that there's actually much more hard evidence for reincarnation than there is for biological evolution. So, why don't you accept this? With just with that one point, you can catch them. That there is, then if there's reincarnation, then your whole materialistic worldview collapses just on the basis of that. Well, maybe the atheist will have something to say about that. But it's definitely not allowed in the materialistic outlook. I mean, the materialism, by definition, means you cannot accept that there is any spiritual dimension. Of course, they may say, they may cheat and say, some materialists may cheat and say, yeah, we believe in spiritual. That means you be good to people and be nice and protect the environment, and this is spiritual. Not that. That's a cheating pretense at spiritualism, which is actually just materialism. That's all. It's a stylized form of materialism. But there is that in the within the paradigm of reality, in other words, not illusion, there is the existence of spirit, and that we migrate from body to body to body. That when the body dies, the person continues to live. Well, that torpedoes Darwinism. And that doesn't mean that they wouldn't stop being atheists, but their present construct, which supports their atheism, would collapse. They'd have to build a new one. And then there's Buddhism, and there are plenty. It doesn't mean that atheism will be destroyed, but we have a very good platform to attack, and we should be attacking. We should be counter-attacking these people. And in this way, people, if they are at all intelligent and philosophically minded, which is rare in the modern age, but by our preaching we should make people intelligent and philosophically minded. No one's thinking of philosophy. So we should make an interest in it. Just like Srila Prabhupada, no one was thinking of Krishna. Prabhupada came to the West, he created his own market. There was no demand. At one time in the world, there was no demand for Coca-Cola. They made a market. Srila Prabhupada made an interest in Krishna consciousness. So people are not interested in philosophy, especially not in real philosophy. I mean, in understanding the purpose of life. There may be people who are intellectually interested in philosophical speculation, but actually, what is the meaning of life? It's a very serious question. It can be relegated to a comic movie, but it is actually a very serious question. And devotees, we have a platform. It's in the public consciousness that the atheists are attacking. There's no God, and the theists, they have no strong platform to reply with. We do. Those who have been supposed to be theists in the Western world for the last 2,000 years, they're beaten. I mean, the Catholic Church already surrendered in 1962 or 3, Vatican III, to evolutionary theory. He said, okay, we accept evolution, but there's still God. And then Dawkins comes around and says, well, we don't need God for evolutionary theory. So Occam's razor, there's no need for God at all. It's just happens. What's the kimanyat karma hai to come? There's just lust. Where does the lust come from? Everything just comes from a big bang, and we have the mathematics to prove it, and we are scientists, so we know. So we should challenge them. We can do so at a simple philosophical level, more sophisticated scientific level. Those who are trained in science, they will have to do that. But we, every one of us, we can do so. And I remember the speaking with Tribhuvanath Prabhu, who's famous in England and Ireland especially among those devotees who appreciate it. Anyway, he joined the movement at age 15 or whatever. He never had much of an education, but he would go around and preach in the colleges and all these big professors and just have the students laughing at them. He was never what you might call a very intellectually minded devotee. He was out there doing harinams and festivals and prasad distribution. But he read Prabhupada's books. He chanted Hare Krishna with full faith. He pleased Srila Prabhupada, and he could speak with anyone show the foolishness of their propositions. So our movement, we should do this. Otherwise, if we don't put out a message, what it means is that we don't have a message. It's just like if you ask the followers of all these different juggies and all these kind of people, what is their message? 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 Who said there's a message? Or we put out another message. We may think, well, it's so difficult to preach and convince these people. So, well, let's say something that they like to hear. For instance, that ISKCON's mission is to provide all the school children with meals so they can go to school and have a good education. And so people will like that. And you see, people appreciate it. And for years and years, we were never able to really get the appreciation of the public. And now we can. The only problem is that it's not our message. It's not Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not come to inspire midday meals for children so they can get an education and become engineers and doctors and abortionists and everything else. That's not Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. At least, I don't find it anywhere in Srila Prabhupada's writings. So, we can change the message just a little bit, just a little bit. But then you can associate with ISKCON devotees for years and be a major donor and have no idea that we are meant for preaching Bhagavad Gita, because all your interactions with the devotees are for feeding school children to develop the nation. I'm just giving this example because it is prominent here in India. Or you can just stop having a message. You have festivals with no lectures. You have Sunday programs without lectures. You have kirtan melas without lectures, or about the glories of the holy name, just within a narrow focus. Or you can promote other books which have a different message to those of Srila Prabhupada. But that is a deviation. Even if it has a big sign saying ISKCON Founder Acharya, His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, if you don't have the same message, then it's just a sham. It's taking the institution that Prabhupada made and turning it into something else. But actually we do have a very powerful, potent message. It is the message of the Absolute Truth. It is a fact that the body is temporary, the soul is eternal. We are suffering in this material world. By reviving our dormant Krishna consciousness, we can perfect the mission of human life. This is required for the individual and it's required for the whole society. So this is a very powerful message, because it's true. It's very difficult to get through because people are in this material world because they don't want to know about this. But nevertheless, it is our duty to propagate it. So, like I said, particularly we should think now how to, what should be our strategy to get this message across. That is there by book distribution. That is getting the message out. But we have to go in the public and speak it also. And make people aware of this. By doing so, we risk losing goodwill. Because people don't like it. If we say that the schools are slaughterhouses, and people won't like it. But we have to say it. We have to be faithful to Srila Prabhupada and say what he said. So we have to get that message out. People should know, after 50 years of our movement, the public should come to know. If people just like us but they don't know what our message is, that is not our success. Just that, well, people like us, we're popular. That is not our success. They should at least know what our message is, and if they know what our message is, quite likely the powerful people of this world will try to suppress this movement. So we may be afraid of that, or we may think that if people are against us, that there's something, we're doing something wrong, because everyone should like us. But that's not what we learn from Srila Prabhupada. Rather, he said that if people are against us, it's a good sign. If they're against us for the right reasons. If they're against us because we're speaking the truth, then That's our glory. And of course, there are considerations of tact and of time, place, and circumstance. I discussed this just quite extensively in that book on speaking strongly in Srila Prabhupada's service. But anyway, my message in this class is that we have to get our message across. We have to speak that. Let people know. Let our devotees know. Even our own devotees, they have to know what our mission is. So we have to tell them. We have to tell them again and again and again, so they can understand it. Otherwise, the whole thing's useless. Even if we have temples which are popular, there are already so many popular temples. What, in and of itself, what is the benefit of having a popular temple when there are already so many popular temples? People come in, of course there's some benefit, they bow down before Krishna, they go away, but the general direction of their life doesn't change. They remain pious materialists. So it's no great benefit in and of itself to build a temple. Even if people chant Hare Krishna, if they don't know what the message of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra is, then they can go on chanting Hare Krishna for millions of births. So even that won't benefit them, because it's not actual chanting with a prayer. O Krishna, O energy of Krishna, please engage me in your service. So unless people understand why we are doing what we are doing, then what we are doing becomes a hollow shell. So we have to ourselves understand this mission and propagate it. Janma sarthak kari karo para upaka. Make one's life successful and then preach this message of Krishna consciousness. Preach this message as it's given in Bhagavad Gita, as it is. In our classes, in our temples, we may discuss so many points about the demons and how they're misleading the world and their wrong philosophies, but we have to get out in the world and fight with them. It's not enough to win victories in our own temple room against ethereal imagine demons. Yeah, we smash them, but we have to get out and meet them, engage them. And let the world know what the actual fact is, not just within our own circle. Hare Krishna, any question or comment about this, please? Everything's clear. Yeah. We should preach to atheists about Krishna conscious philosophy. Yes, we should. We may not expect atheists to change, but at least we can expose them and make them less arrogant. They should know that they have a good enemy. They should know that they just can't get away. They can get away with thrashing the Christians. They can't get away with thrashing us. They should know that. Yeah. So instead of, even after knowing that they are not going to change, as you said, actually we can expose, but instead of doing that, if we preach to innocent people, those who are ready to take up. If we preach to innocent people, those who are ready to take up, isn't that better? But they'll also be confused by the atheists. The innocent people are being confused by the atheists. So we have to expose the atheists. The innocent people, they're so innocent that they can be misled. Even they take to Krishna consciousness, they can be misled by atheists also. Even after taking, because they're not convinced. Actually, if we can turn people from atheists, they'll make the best devotees because they're convinced. Otherwise, innocent people, you can gather many of them around you, and you can advertise that we have so many devotees. Well, that's good also. That's not bad, but Srila Prabhupada set the example of not just preaching among the innocent, but fighting with the demons. We should follow that example. And then the innocent, they'll be more inclined to follow us also. Otherwise, if we don't preach these things, then we may have people who are following, who are initiated, but in their heart they're doubtful. And they won't be able to convince their children. So preaching against atheism is required. Actually, Prabhupada said that Mayavad is more dangerous than atheism. Because it's Veda-Shrutya Nastikyavada. It's atheism under the shelter of the Vedas. Veda-Shrutya Nastikyavada. Bodhakeyadik. So, anything else? Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.